of Shanti. It's good to see you all here. I meet many of you in different parts of the UK and Europe and the Middle East, but I'm glad that you all made the journey to be here. And I know that there's already been a very rich program that you've been engaged in. Who has enjoyed the program so far? That's pretty unanimous. Good, I'm really glad for that. And is translation okay? Yeah? Good. There are four subjects which are absolutely critical for meditation, but also generally for spiritual development. The understanding of soul and God. There's a problem somewhere. Okay, better now? Yes? Not yes. I think on the one side people want fans and on the other side people don't want fans. Okay. So people may think that the subject and soul and God are the things we need to understand about for meditation. But actually it's not enough. And yes, when people are just superficially interested and they want to have a little bit of method to find a tiny bit of peace whenever they meditate, then yes, soul and God is sufficient. But when they really want to become peaceful, which is different to having a little bit of peace, then these two other subjects come in a big way. Karma, because whatever is the quality of karma I'm engaged in is going to impact my yoga. Say, for example, if I let go of my negative emotions and I get into a state of anger and I say things that are not very pleasant, what's going to happen to my yoga? You tell me. It's going to fly away. I'm not going to be able to have yoga. And if I've been able to maintain my calm, my peace, then when it's time for yoga, the platform is ready and I can come to that platform and lift off. And so my karma has an immediate effect on my yoga. But there's another translation of karma yoga. And that is that when I'm in a state of yoga, this transforms the quality of my karma. And so to be in a state of yoga continually, as far as possible, is very, very critical. And so when people used to say to Dadi Janki, how long do you meditate for? Her answer was, ask me how long I don't meditate. Because the yoga is impacting the karma and you're seeing the quality of the karma. And then thirdly, it means that as I engage in karma, I have to make sure that I maintain the highest level of consciousness. So So my karma and my yoga are not separate, but they're together. The word karma yoga is one word. And so karma and yoga are absolutely intricately mixed up together. They're linked up together. You've been hearing the definition of this word yoga, union. But what about the definition of this word karma? And the word itself just simply means action. No more, no less. That's it. Just action. And then, in the context of most things that are happening today, have you ever heard the expression, well, that's your karma? Who's heard that expression? Some of you. And when people make this comment, well, that's your karma, what they're alluding to is something not very pleasant. You know, somebody's got sick and they'll say, that's your karma. And it's not a very nice thing to say, but some people do say it. And so the word karma has taken on this negative color. In fact, it's neutral. It doesn't have any color. But we're used to having the effect of bad karma in such a widespread way that people really begin to think that the word karma means something negative. Not true. And I'll share with you the basic ideas of karma, and there'll be time for meditation, reflection, there'll be time for questions, there'll be time for all of you to interact together. So let's see how we get on. And so first step, just a simple definition of karma. Three types of karma: positive karma, negative karma, neutral karma. Positive karma, and I'll share with you what I understand of this. Positive karma is the karma through which the soul comes closer to God. Positive karma is that by which souls are able to experience happiness for the self. When I've done some positive karma, I feel happy. But also, my positive karma is giving happiness to another. So these two aspects are the main aspects for me by which we can see what sort of karma it is we're doing. And then, by default, you can see the definition of negative karma. Any action that takes me further away from God. And secondly, any action that is causing sorrow to myself and sorrow to others. And actually, in this first one that takes another away from God, but it's also that which takes me away from God. Both those things. So, how do we deal with karma? The third one. And the third one we describe as neutral karma, which means there's neither positive nor negative effect. But I also have to tell you that at this particular time in human history, I really don't think that there's anyone who's engaged in totally neutral karma. Even if you're doing good karma, that's good karma. And so there's a positive result of that. And you accrue the credit, the merit for that. And you may not have done it with any ego or any feeling that, well, I'm going to do this because it's going to bring me closer to God and so on. It's not even done in a conscious way like that. And doing it in a conscious way is not wrong. But even if there's an action that you don't do in a conscious way in that sense, yet still, the very fact that the influences of the world are so strong, there's going to be some type of influence there. There is a time in human history when there is neutral karma, but it's very much related to time. And that's the fourth aspect that I wanted to mention. Soul and God and karma and the fourth thing, time. We have to know what time it is in human history today to be able to intensify our practice of yoga. It makes a very, very big difference. So, this first thing, positive karma. So before I can do positive karma, I have to be stable in the awareness of the soul. And without the awareness of the soul, what's going to happen is that the influences of the world are going to impact me. A little bit of greed, a little bit of attachment, a little bit of ego. And I'll say, but that's normal. That's what human life is about. And my answer is, well, look at the state of human life today. Do I want to carry on like that? Suffering, chaos, tragedy. And if I do, that's absolutely fine. The beautiful thing about karma is that you make your own choice. And even when we've done things out of ignorance, in a sense, it's been because we chose to do it. Okay, I didn't understand the detail of the philosophy of karma before I started studying spiritual things. But yet, I could have chosen something else. I didn't have to choose anything negative. I had many choices and I could have chosen whatever it is I wanted. And so karma is always choice, ultimately. Even if my parents are telling me, do this, do this, do this. But finally, even as a child, I'm the one who decides whether to do it or not do it. You know, my parents can tell me, my mother can tell me, eat green food, eat your spinach, eat your greens. But it's my choice. She's even telling me, it's good for you, it's good for you, it's good for you. But it's my choice, finally. The doctor gives you medicine and says, this is what is good for you. And then whether you actually take it or leave it sitting on the shelf is up to you. So even when we know that something is good karma, we have the information, we are told about it, but we don't necessarily do it. Because the whole of this amazing, intricate web of life is choice. And through my choices, I do my karma, and through the karma that I do, I determine my peace and happiness today, but also I determine my future. So the subject of karma is absolutely vital to everything that's going on in life. So, karma. Positive karma. Now that I know about the soul, am I practicing that awareness of soul consciousness? Being aware, I, the soul, am looking. I, the soul, am speaking. And this is just the instrument. No more, no less. Some of you may have been to Delphi, the temple in Greece. Is there anyone here from Greece? Ah, one. No, two. Okay. So, you especially would have seen the temple in Delphi. But for those who haven't, it's worth a visit. And they've got this statue of this very handsome young man, and the name of the statue is Charioteer, and what he's wearing are royal garb, royal costume, not the costume of the usual charioteer, but he's wearing the royal costume, and the arms have broken. Who broke them, when they broke them, you know, nobody knows, but the arms are broken. But yet, from his gaze is absolutely stable, looking just ahead. When you're driving and you're the charioteer of your car, would you be able to survive or let others survive with safety if you just look straight ahead? You would be killed, or others would kill you, or you would kill others. If you're a driver, you have to look ahead, you have to look into your mirror to see what's going on, you have to look into your mirror to see what's going behind. And even a tiny little blind spot where your mirrors can't show you. So the driver, the chariot, needs to have all-round vision. And this young man in royal costume, looking straight ahead, and yet the title, the charioteer, what it's telling me is that the title is not about being the charioteer of a chariot, but the title is about being the charioteer of the body. And this is why you see his eyes completely stable and his posture absolutely still, without any sign of movement. When the statue has been captured in movement, then it's visible. But this is absolutely motionless still. And so, through the day, if I want to make sure I'm doing nothing but good karma, a requisite is that I be here, and I look through the eyes, and I see others. How do I see them? Someone with a beard, someone with dark hair, someone with blonde hair, someone with no hair, someone with... So, am I seeing all of these things? Well, if I do, it's a total distraction. But in soul consciousness, what I'm seeing is the soul. And the beauty of this is that when we see soul to soul, whatever other conditions and judgments we had in our mind about another being, all of that dissolves. Because now, nationality, color, race, religion is not part of the picture. And this is karma. Why? Because when I see with the vision of division, then my behavior is going to be of conflict. You're separate, this one separate, this one separate, this one separate, I'm separate. We're different. And I don't like what I see. But if I'm a soul, and I see all of you as souls, we're the children of God. And we're one family. And of course, in my awareness of soul, there's self-esteem. And when I look at you as a soul, I see you with that dignity. And so, good karma. When I see you, and see you with dignity, what I'm offering you is a support for you to be able to do that which is good. And so we don't normally think about our awareness or attitude or vision as being part of karma. We give donation, we give charity. We think about that as good karma. Or if I speak angry words, or I hit somebody in anger, yes, we understand that that's bad karma. But in fact, karma starts right here. Karma starts with my thoughts. Karma begins with my intentions. And so, what are the intentions with which I begin to do something? And so soul consciousness is the foundation for good karma. My awareness of the soul, my vision of the soul, and then whatever past attitudes I've filled myself with through my experiences, I'm able to step away from all of those things and just simply see others with the truth and beauty and dignity of the eternal self. And so, good karma. And it's easy. It started immediately. No trouble. And so you don't have to make hard effort for good karma. I don't have to go and dig somebody's garden to call it good karma. Yes, maybe if my neighbor is unwell or is old and can't manage and I need to help them, great. But I don't have to do that. If I need to, fine. But it's very simple, very natural. When I understand it, it begins in here. And so good karma is right there. And then, of course, yes, my words. My words can be uplifting, encouraging, supportive, positive, transformative. I'm sure you've had people come to you and say that, when you said this to me 10 years ago, it changed my life. Has that happened? I'm sure it has. And so that's the power of our words. Our words can change somebody's mind. Our words can uplift somebody. But the other way is also true. I sometimes shoot out an arrow, and at that moment, I don't realize the impact it's going to have on another. understand in today's world, you say one word out of place and it hits the media and there's an uproar. It happened to somebody that I'm connected with recently. They're in a big public position and they made a comment and the media took it up and Facebook, Twitter, everything was talking about this. And then the PR of that particular company had to step in and send out an apology and say that, of course, this person didn't really mean what he was saying. And okay, so people accepted the apology and maybe some did, some didn't. And then it sort of settled. But people's memories are long and they don't forget. And so now they're going to be very cautious with this individual. And so the words we speak, we don't realize the impact it's going to have. They say that once the arrow has been shot, it can never come back. It's a fact. And if my tongue is like a needle and I'm able to stitch somebody's heart with my words and take away their pain and heal them, well, that's blessings. And if my tongue is a sword cutting somebody's heart into pieces, then it's a curse. It's a lot of bad repercussions that I have to deal with. And so words are karma. And then definitely actions are karma. That we've known about anyway, probably. Because just as the word yoga has become universal, in the same way I find that every country I go to, and I travel a lot, every country I go to, the word karma, people will know, people will relate to it. They might not know the intricacies, but they do know about it. So anything that I think, I say, I do, can be either positive or it can be negative. Very rarely in today's world is it neutral. And then I want to look at the subject of karma in terms of our life. And then what we'll do is at 10:30 we'll just take a break and then you'll be able to, is that your usual time, break, 10:30? It's flexible. Or if you prefer, 10:30, what we can do is to actually let you sit together in groups and come up with any questions that you may have as a group, have a discussion about whatever, and then you can also ask questions. So, another way to look at it is, what am I doing from right from the morning through till the end of the day? And what I'm doing in the morning is, usually, it's personal time for myself and whatever it is I'm engaged in, the things I need to do to take care of my body. But any one of those actions can be either good or bad. And again, very often it's not very neutral. It could be, but it's not. So say, for example, you go for a shower. Is it good karma? Is it bad karma? Is it neutral karma? Well, if I'm doing it in a state of body consciousness, and I need a dozen different lotions and gels, and I have to be fragrant, I have to look beautiful, I have to have, you know? So it's very much the consciousness of I as a body. It's definitely not consciousness of the soul. Consciousness of the soul? And yes, it's fine to keep your gels and lotions and everything. No problem. But what's the awareness? The awareness is that I, the soul, am responsible for taking care of this. And it's my responsibility to take care of it, keep it clean, make sure all the hygiene rules are being taken care of. And if I do this, and I stay in that awareness of how precious this is, but also that I am the master of this, then in this awareness, it's good karma. And so my ego about this, and the same thing becomes bad karma. And my awareness of being the master of this, and the same thing becomes good karma. I have to go to work. And even if it's running a household, it's work. Sometimes it's not recognized as work, but it's many hours of work, actually. And so whether it's working in an office or working in a home environment, but it's work. And so through my work, what is my consciousness? Is it one of competition? I have to do better than the next. Even at home, well, my neighbor baked such a beautiful cake, now I have to make sure that my cake is bigger and more beautiful. And so that attitude of competition, good karma, negative karma, you can see. Or if I do that same work, in the awareness that I'm responsible for earning my own living so that I don't become a burden on another. And that applies to homework or whether it applies to office work. Office, I'm earning a living so that then I'm not a burden on anyone else. But equally, homework. I'm doing this so that then I can make sure that I'm responsible for myself and nobody has to think about me or take care of me. Or another aspect of that, I am responsible for my family. And so I do the work I do, not just simply for myself, but I'm doing it to care for others. At home again, I'm doing the housework, keeping the home clean, making sure the food's ready, whatever it may be, running the whole household, but I'm doing it not just for my own comfort, I'm doing it for my family. And so the quality of karma has changed. Another step. I'm at work, I'm doing my work, but let the quality of my work be such that others are able to see that it's being done with honesty, with integrity, with accuracy, with efficiency, and they see that the work I do is different to the way I used to do it before or the way that others are doing it. And it can be at the point where they come to me and say, well, how come you're able to do your work in much less time than it takes us to do our work? And you're able to tell them, it's because I meditate, it's because I've learned to focus, I've learned to concentrate, and so I'm doing my work with that awareness. And bingo, it's not just good karma, but it's very pure, elevated karma. And you can see the difference. Same karma, same timetable, 8 hours of work. The people who live here and in the 3 campuses, it's about 1,000 people who live here. And you'll see how each one just gets on with their work quietly. Nobody has to tell them, it's time for you to go and do this. They know what the need is. You know for sure that your meal is going to be ready, right? And if it wasn't ready, you would be a little bit surprised. What happened? All these days it was fine. So, what went wrong? And did you see anyone give orders to anyone? It happened seamlessly. Why? Because the people doing whatever work it is they're doing, not just speaking, but all the other things that combine to make up your experience or my experience or anyone else's experience, it requires at least 42 different departments. Not just one person thinking, let's hold a retreat, let's have the peace of mind. Or somebody else thinking, oh yes, I can give a very good lecture there. But all the background, all the different things that are going on, as in any organization. But usually in most organizations, what happens is that people will say, well, I started at 9, so I have to finish at 5 or 6 or whatever time. It's time for me to go home. And for everybody here, this is home. And so they don't say, okay, I'm leaving now. You can just get on with whatever it is you want to. But they'll be there. I don't know whether you come for the 4 o'clock meditation. Do you come for the 4 o'clock? You do. I just arrived last night from the Middle East, and so I'm not in tune with exactly how the system is working here for this specific retreat. But of course, most of us have 4 o'clock meditation. And do you have tea before you come for the 4 o'clock? Some of you do. No one. No one has tea before you come? Some of you do. And who gets up at 3 o'clock and gets the tea ready? There's somebody. And in fact, when we have not just a retreat for 160 plus people, but when we have the programs running for our regular students, it's thousands. Like now, soon after your visit, we'll be welcoming the students from across the world, from 95 countries this time, I think, and the number is around 2,100. So it's not just a 3-minute job making tea, but it takes time. Making tea for 2,000 people, it takes time. And some people, not just one or two, but a whole group of people will be there 3 o'clock in the morning, heating the water, getting the tea ready, so that people can come and have tea at 3:45 and then be ready for meditation. It's good karma. My point is that when you do karma, not just because you have to, or not even just because it's for the income for a limited family, But when it's out of love for God, then that is elevated karma, pure karma, that brings happiness to the self and it gives happiness to others. And so very definitely, the whole subject of karma is, what's going on in here? My thoughts, my motives, my feelings. And through that happens good karma or otherwise. I've spoken about the day's work. What about your leisure? Again, my leisure activity can be just for my own gratification, or the time I have for leisure is time that I give for service. And I know many people, and not just within the Brahma Kumaris, but many, many people who give every moment of their time outside of work in some form of charitable activity, in some way to be able to help others. I remember when I was 16, it was something that we were offered the opportunity for, and this was at school. And at school we were told, would you like to give your time at the weekend or in the evening, and especially during the summer holidays, in adopting an old person who doesn't have anybody to care for them? And it was optional, but at least the idea was introduced. And so some of us said yes, some said they're going away or whatever, whatever. And the old lady I used to go and care for, and usually it was two in twos, it wasn't one alone, but two of us used to go for this this old lady who lived in this house alone, and we used to do her shopping, we used to clean her garden, cut the grass, all sorts of things. And it was a very beautiful experience. It was a feeling that instead of using my time just in watching television or just in playing tennis, I've done something for another human being who was in need. That's one example. But you can see the principle. I have a choice. I have leisure time. I can do what I choose with it. Money? Money is big time karma. When we exchange money, it's a karmic situation. You give me your money, I give you goods, or I give you a service, no karma. But you give me your money, and I don't give you the goods or the services, bad karma. Or if you give me your money, and then you control me, because you say, well, I gave you the money, so you have to do what I have to, what I say to you. Now that's not good karma. Or I have money and I give it and it's used for wrong action. It's not just the person who did the wrong action, but it's me. I gave it. So the repercussions come to me. I have money which, after having looked after my own needs, my family needs, and then there's something to spare. And I say, okay, let me invest it so that it makes more money. That's greed. I have money and there's spare. And I say, well, rather than just have it sitting there somewhere, I want to use it to be able to help others. It brings me blessings and it multiplies. I don't even have enough money for myself, but yes, I'm taking care of basic needs, But I say, let me do as much as I can for others, because their need is greater than mine. Instead of having two pieces of bread, I can manage with one. And the other piece of bread, let me give to another one who has nothing. That's karma. And it's good karma. It's going to make sure that the universe keeps providing me with bread. And I'll never get into a state of hunger or starvation. So, karma is not just a simple thing, but karma is maybe the most complex, the deepest of all subjects. And karma is absolutely accurate. Nobody's thoughts, nobody's desires, nobody's wishes, nothing can manipulate karma. It's absolutely fixed, and it will move in the direction that I've started the ball rolling in. And karma is totally up to me. Nothing to do with anyone else. Om Shanti. I'm not quite sure how you're going to get into groups because of the furniture. And it's a little bit heavy trying to move it. So here's a suggestion and see if it works for you. If instead of moving the furniture, you move yourselves, and if you talk to each other over the back of the sofa, so say for example, if the three here in front, and it doesn't have to be this group in this way, but just in terms of positioning, if the three of you were to turn around and face the three at the back, then it very easily makes a group of six or a group of five. Would that work for you? And then the ones at the back with the chairs, that's easy, you can lift your chairs, but please don't move the sofas, it really would be a little bit chaotic. There you go, you're being very creative in the way you're sitting. Okay, good.